Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, everyone. This is Sean from the Sean Baker Orchestra, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Mark Striegel. Welcome to Talking Metal. We have two very special guests on today's show. The first is Sean Baker, a great guitar player from Michigan here in the United States. And then we have Michael Ahmet from Arch Enemy checking in with us. Arch Enemy have a new record on the way, and it is a pretty special record because it revisits Arch Enemy's early history. But they do the revisiting with, you know, Charlie on bass and Angela on vocals, of course. So it's cool. You get these old Arch Enemy tracks re-recorded in the new Arch Enemy sound. So I'm looking forward to it. From what I've heard, there's some great tracks off of this album. And we're actually going to end today's podcast with a brand new version of Pilgrim, an older Arch Enemy song. So it's stay tuned for that. Great song. Great song. Anyways, let's first get into a little music. This is Screams from the Deep by Serpent Cult. We'll be right back. That was Screams from the Deep by Serpent Cult here on Talking Metal. Guys, the best way to support Talking Metal is to go buy a t-shirt. You can do that on talkingmetal.com in the store section. Check them out. Brand new, very cool t-shirts. Pretty affordable. You know, they do hit you a little bit with the postage, which has nothing to do with us. But definitely show some support. Go buy a t-shirt on talkingmetal.com, your official Silver Spacecraft Talking Metal t-shirts. And also another thing you can do to support is when you meet these bands that you hear on the podcast, let them know that you heard their interview on Talking Metal. And just spread the word, spread the Talking Metal love, as you will. Let's get into a little Sean Baker right now. This guy has been a friend of the show for a long time, and I'm glad that we finally did an interview with him. It's been a long time coming. This guy is one of the best guitar players in the United States right now. His name is Sean Baker. This is the Sean Baker Orchestra. This is called Butterfingers. It's off his first CD. Later on, after we hear from Sean, after the interview, we'll get into a newer Sean Baker Orchestra track called The Dukes of New York. So anyways, little Sean Baker followed by the interview. We have Sean Baker on the line. Sean, how are you?
How are you guys doing?
We're doing good.
Great.
Thanks,
Sean.
Thanks for calling in. You're calling in from Michigan tonight?
Unfortunately, yes.
Sean, man, I'm really excited to talk to you because we've been featuring you on like the Talking Metal podcast, Talking Rock podcast, Talking Metal on Fuse, and we're just big fans of your music.
Yeah, I can't believe we're only now, 4 years later, getting him on. So thanks for joining us. And man, we first discovered you, I believe, by a column in Guitar Player, a Mike Varney column. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I was lucky enough to have a dream come true and actually be put in contact with Mike Varney, and I was lucky enough to actually make it to the world-famous Spotlight column that I'd probably been reading since my early teens.
I remember that column, yeah. Man.
And now, let's just recap for some of the younger listeners or non-guitar-playing listeners who don't know who Mike Varney is. Sean, can you talk a little bit about his history?
Oh, my Lord, absolutely. It'd be an honor. Mike Varney was a guy that was well ahead of his time back in the 80s when it was actually kind of cool to be good on your instruments and in kind of a show-off type of era of musicianship back then. Mike had the vision of getting all these unheard-of guitarists together that had mind-boggling chops and was really over-the-top guitar playing. And he, I believe he discovered Yngwie Malmsteen, Paul Gilbert, Jason Becker, and really was carrying the torch for instrumental guitar, especially back in the day. And like I say, I was lucky enough to actually shake hands with the man, and was always a fan of the type of acts that he had on his label. And actually, I just did an interview recently with Virtuosity1.com and mentioned that probably Mike's had a bigger impact on guitar playing over the years as any one guitarist.
Without a doubt. I mean, I used to find out back in my hometown about who was the new hot guitar player from reading that column. And today when I was looking over your MySpace page, I saw a quote from Mike that said, he was talking about you, he said, a guitarist with a full complement of requisite techniques and chops. And I just think it's amazing to be recognized by somebody like that. So congratulations, Sean.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, and you're right. It's definitely a dream come true. Growing up in Detroit and just having a love for music growing up and whatnot, and really looked up to a lot of those guys, you know, Mike Varney included, and a lot of the gentlemen that ended up doing records on the Shrapnel label. And a couple of them now I can actually call my friends, and I was out in Vegas last November for my birthday with my wife, and actually went out to dinner with Mr. Varney with my wife, and went and hung out with George Lynch, who was playing out there, who was a huge influence on me growing up. And Mike kind of took me and my wife under his wing and took us to a couple places there in Vegas, and it's like he knew everybody. He took me to a bar. Vinnie Paul was there. Dennis Quaid was there. And we just had a great time. And like I say, it was really a dream come true. It really surreal to look up to these people as a youngster when you just, you know, that, I'm sure I don't need to tell you guys live and breathe music as well, and to actually bump shoulders with the guy and drive around in his car, and he shared sushi with me and my wife off his plate. So, I mean, it was just unbelievable. I mean, I was walking 10 inches off the ground for a month afterwards. It was really, really unbelievable.
Cool. That's awesome. And you've also, I mean, you have had dealings with Paul Gilbert and Bruce Bouillet too, right?
Yeah, Bruce Bouillet is my best friend on the planet. And was another guy that I really looked up to growing up. And so that was a very surreal thing as well when I became friends with him. And then to have him mix both my CDs, and he played a little bit on the first one and actually contributed a song to the new one. And really, at this point in my life, I can't imagine making a CD without having Bruce involved in it in some way. And I just love the guy to death.
Of course, now, Bruce was with Racer X and later The Scream.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Now, I got to ask you, did you already do some shows with Bruce's band, or is that upcoming?
It was supposed to start at the end of September, and Bruce's CD, his new CD that he's going to push on this Virtuosity 09 tour, has got pushed back a little bit. So the actual dates with Bruce have been pushed back, but we are doing a couple Virtuosity 09 shows here in Michigan with Joe Stump, who's another friend of mine that I'm lucky enough to have on our new CD as well, and another gentleman by the name of Michael Harris, who is another instrumental guitarist from Lion Music. So all three of us being on Lion Music seems like a cool thing. These guys are my buddies, and it's a lot of fun. We get to go up and do the Geech 3 type jam at the end of the night, and it's really, really a great time, especially if you love guitar.
Yeah, that song you do with Joe Stump on the new record, by the way, Neoclassical Gas, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yes, sir. I was lucky enough to have Joe on that.
Yeah, that's a great song. I was driving down to my mom's the other day, a couple weeks ago, actually, and I had that. You had just sent me your CD, which I had picked up on at the post office on my way down to her place.
Cool.
And I just kept hitting, you know, I kept playing that song over and over again, just full blast driving down 78 in Jersey to my mom's. It's such a great song.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and a great, great album. The new album, the second album by the Sean Baker Orchestra, is called Baker's Dozen. And let's talk about the actual orchestra. Are these I know on the CD there's I think you have three guys pictured with you, right? Are these guys that were on the first CD too, or is this a new band kind of?
Well, I hate to call them a new band because I've actually been with these guys for 5 years, and what it boiled down to is when I put the first CD was actually recorded to be a vocal album at the time, and before we had the time to add the vocals to the CD, the band disbanded, and I was stuck with like 17 backing tracks that I ended up picking, I think, about 9 of them to use as a template to make an instrumental record. Well, the gentleman that played on the record, as far as bass and guitar, bass and drums were concerned, were no longer a part of the project. So it was basically me going into a studio with an engineer and throwing all this guitar goofy nonsense on top of songs that were already established. Well, when a couple opportunities had arose for me to play some high-profile shows, I wanted to get a band together as opposed to just the instrumental guitars playing backing tracks. So a couple of the guys that are actually all the guys that you see on the new CD are guys that I've wanted to play with since I was growing up in the Detroit scene, and finally had the opportunity to get Lawrence, who is a monster on drums, and him and my bass player Dave have been in bands since they were about 13 years old. They roadied for Blackfoot for years, I know, and these guys got a lot of hours and minutes together, so it was really a no-brainer to get these guys to come along because I knew bass and drums would be tight. One of my best friends in high school actually laid down a couple solos for the first CD, Al, and it was a no-brainer to ask him because at the time we were best friends and I seen the guy daily anyway, so I figured, well, just strap your guitar and let's do this. Well, a couple of years, I guess it's probably been two and a half years ago, Al had had to leave the band, unfortunately, and one of our biggest fans was this character named C-Mac from Detroit, who's actually very good friends with Eric Kluber. Wow. And, and so he was an unbelievable guitarist. I'd go watch his band, he'd come watch us. So when my friend Al had to leave, it was just a no-brainer to get C-Mac because the guy is an unbelievable guitarist and brought a lot of enthusiasm to the band, which was nice.
Cool. Now, Sean, before we let you go, I got two things. I just want to tell you, I think Baker's Dozen is like one of the most creative titles I've ever heard for an album. I just love it because your name, Baker, and of course we know a Baker's Dozen is 13, and you got 13 tracks. So congratulations. Good for you on that title. I love it.
I appreciate it. I've actually, that was a tongue-in-cheek thing that you would not believe the compliments I've had in the donut and the whole nine yards. It's cool. We did a couple CD release shows here locally, and if you bought, we had a combo package. You buy our new T-shirt and our new CD at the gigs, and we gave you donuts.
Cool. And that donut shop on the cover of the album, that's out in L.A., right, by the airport, right?
Yes, sir. Randy's Donut. You can actually see the donut when you're landing at LAX.
Yes, yes. Many times I've seen it, and I've never stopped there, but I need to next time.
Very good.
Do yourself a favor and do it. It's awesome. I had to just because I used the pictures.
Yeah, very good. Now, the album doesn't seem to be on iTunes yet. Do you think it'll be coming to iTunes soon?
From what I hear, it's I would think in the next month or so that for some reason some of the American distributors, because Lion Music is out of Finland, I have some friends that own record shops throughout upstate New York and whatnot, and they said they're having a hard time of finding it as well. And I know they were having a shipping problem. A few of the boxes of the CDs, I believe, were lost from the company that produced them. They got lost in between there and the label. So I had a hard time getting my CDs when it was released. So, but I have been told that we should be seeing some stuff show up here in the next month or so.
Okay. And in the meantime, is there a place online that you recommend to buy the album?
Yes, sir. There's a link on my MySpace page. It seems like everybody's using MySpace these days. So I pretty much put everything there. You can listen to some new songs on there as well and cool. Some of the old ones. But there is a link to buy any merchandise from us.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Sean, we'd love to get a Talking Metal ID saying your name and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Yeah, it'd be my pleasure. Hi, everyone. This is Sean from the Sean Baker Orchestra, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Cool. And what do you want us to take? What song should we play to take us out here? We actually have played the one with Joe Stump before, so
okay.
I'd like to hit a different one if possible.
Well, I tell you what. Why don't we go out with the Dukes of New York, and I dedicate it to both of you gentlemen.
Well, thank you, man. Thank you for the special thanks on the record, by the way. We appreciate that.
Oh, you guys have been there since day one. I really appreciate it and cannot thank you enough. I appreciate it to both of you. Thank you very much.
Sean, thank you very much for taking the time out today, and we hope to see you real soon.
Rock on, my brothers.
Take care.
Thank you. And guys, do yourself a favor. Go buy Baker's Dozen by the Sean Baker Orchestra. A lot of great stuff on this album. This is Dukes of New York. Thanks for joining us on the Talking Metal Live show. We're going to wrap it up a little early tonight. I'm trying to catch a train and avoid taking a car home, which saves me about...
$90.
Yeah, about $90. So there you go. This is Dukes of New York by the Sean Baker Orchestra. That was Dukes of New York by Sean Baker Orchestra. Check those guys out. If you go to today's show notes, we will have a link up there where you can go buy the CD. I definitely recommend it. It's a great listen. And that song I mentioned in the interview, Neoclassical Gas with Joe Stump, rocks. We're going to talk with Michael from Arch Enemy in a little bit. He's going to tell us about Gus G, who actually took lessons, I believe, from Joe Stump. So there you go. Always a tie-in. But right now, let's get into an Arch Enemy classic. This is We Will Rise. Then we'll hear from Michael from Arch Enemy, and we'll finish today's show with a brand new Arch Enemy track. Hey, this is Mark Striegel from Talking Metal, and on the line we have Michael from Arch Enemy. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. So I wanted to get right into the new album that's on the way, The Root of All Evil, which will be released on September 28th. Why was now the time to revisit a lot of these older songs that are re-recorded on this album?
Why? Mainly because we found the time in between other stuff that we had going on, like we always seem to be on the road and doing things like that, so you know, we just kind of squeezed it in between a few tours. We had the idea for quite some time now to do this kind of record, and took us a couple of years to just kind of get the timing right and get into the studio and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been something that we've been thinking about and even talking about in interviews for a couple of years, 2-3 years now, that we're going to do, and we finally got around to doing it. I don't know if now's a good time or not.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Now, some of these songs like The Mortal and Diva Satanica, I know I've heard you guys do in concert, but were there songs that maybe you hadn't played live in a long time that you actually had to go back and relearn the guitar parts?
Yes, absolutely. Those songs, for instance, those songs that we'd never played live as well that are featured in this album. And, you know, in the studio that we'd only done in the studio, like Demonic Science, for instance, a track that we did from that was originally on the Burning Bridges album, 99. And 10 years ago, you know, that's a long time. And we had no idea what the hell we'd been up to in the studio. So layering harmonies and stuff, you know, we had to pick it all out. But it was fun. It was a fun process as well.
Now, I know with bands like Exodus, when they went back and re-recorded Bonded by Blood, there was, among their fan base, there was, you know, some positive response, but also some negative response. And I was curious, how have the longtime Arch Enemy fans been reacting to the fact that you're going back and basically redoing a lot of your older songs?
I think, like with every, like you said, this kind of release tends to cause some kind of controversy in that sense. But that was never our intention, really. I just thought, you know, like when Testament did a similar project a few years back, they re-recorded a selection of songs from, I think, their two or three first albums. And I thought that was very successful, that project. I thought it was very good. I actually prefer listening to that album. I think it's called First Strike, Still Deadly. And I actually prefer listening to that than to their originals. I thought that's kind of, to me, that was kind of a successful, that was done successfully, the project that they did, the Testament. We wanted to do something like that, but obviously we had albums that were not, I don't think those first three records are held in that high regard, really. I know the band was really small when we put out those first three albums. We didn't have much of a following. And then when Angela joined and Charlie joined on bass and stuff like that in 2000, then we started with what I consider like the real Arch Enemy, you know, from Wages of Sin. You know, that's when our real sort of career or whatever you want to call it started, and we gained a much broader fan base.
Yeah, and
to me it's not that controversial, really. I mean, we love some of that old material on the first three albums, and we thought it'd be cool to go back, jam those songs again, put them out. And, you know, the old records are still there. It's not like we're trying to rewrite the past or anything, so... You know, to me, it's not that controversial, but I know I've heard some negative opinions.
I'm sure there's
everybody's got an opinion, so it's cool.
Yeah, I'm sure, like you said, there's a lot of fans who probably don't really follow the band, you know, before Angela joined. So this is a chance.
Yeah, the majority of fans, yeah, that we have now have a lot of them. Some of them are aware that we had a few albums out before Angela joined, but they're not interested, you know.
Right.
In listening to those old records because they're kind of different. They got a different production, a little bit different songwriting sometimes. The vocals are really different. You know, we kind of got a new sound when we did Wages of Sin. In many ways, that was a new beginning for us. So, yeah. But, you know, I still thought, you know, we were kind of thinking it would be awesome to play like the Burning Angel or Pilgrim songs like that live. We thought that would be a lot of fun to do that again. And also it's kind of a fun thing for us to do, you know, to revisit. And yeah.
And like you said, it's a whole different sound with the new recordings. I mean, a song like Pilgrim is, I can imagine it's just going to go over really, really well with the newer fan base of the band because really sounds.
Yeah. Good. I mean, those are, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's got some of that one, seems to make sense, you know, now with the new band. And Beast of Man was another song that I thought, I never liked the original version of Beast of Man. And I thought, you know, I thought we could do it better. So, and I think we did. So, you know, this, and then obviously it's all up to personal taste, you know. So if you prefer the original, so to speak, or this new version, they're both readily available.
Right, right. Cool. So it's not like you're... It's not like you're taking those off the market or anything like that. They're still out there.
No, well, I know Megadeth. Didn't Megadeth do something? Didn't Dave Mustaine do something where he
He remastered some of those early records, and at the same time, I believe, I would need to check this, but I believe he re-recorded some of the parts.
And then replaced them, right?
In
the catalog. The originals are not so. I don't know about that. I wouldn't do that, go that far with this. This is not that dramatic. Well, like Ozzy did, right? He re-recorded, didn't they re-record some parts?
Yeah, they got rid of Bob Daisley's bass parts and Lee's parts and re-recorded those parts.
Exactly. Now, this is, we didn't fuck with the original master tapes or anything. This is just, we went in, you know, we just went in and recorded everything from scratch. And
right. I got you.
The originals are still there.
Right.
Not that I'm comparing them to Blizzard of Oz or anything.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Cool. Well, we're excited for this new album, and we're excited to hear a lot of these great old tracks in concert, too. Let's talk about what you've been up to for the past few years. Back in 2008 and into 2009, you've been doing stuff with Carcass, reunion stuff. How has it felt reuniting with Bill and Jeff after all these years?
Really good. I mean, it's been a fantastic ride, really good experience. I can't say enough good things about it, really. It's been really awesome, you know, and on every level. And also with the original drummer, Kenno, and he was involved in the reunion. He couldn't tour with us, but he came out to all the shows, and not so much in the U.S. maybe, but in Europe and places that were easier to travel to. He came out to all the shows and hung out and played a little drum solo and stuff like that.
Right. He was at the New York show, right?
He was, yes. I mean, stuff like that was just, the whole thing just had a really good atmosphere, you know. And I'm actually off to Moscow. It's been a prolonged sort of reunion. It's not quite like the Kiss reunion, but, you know.
Right.
It's hard to stop when people want to come and see you play, and we're having so much fun, you know. So we're actually playing the last show of the year of 2009 in Moscow this weekend on Saturday.
Cool.
So I'm flying out tomorrow to Moscow to play a show there.
Excellent. And so, now you've known Bill Steer since you were kids, really, right?
Well, teenagers at least, yeah. Definitely, yeah.
How did you first get to meet him?
He was playing, I mean, he was really young. He joined Napalm Death when he was 16 or 17 or something like that. And I was involved at the same age, you know, we're the same age, and we, you know, doing the tape trading, you know, writing letters, physical letters.
Right, pre-email.
Yeah, this is all pre-internet. It's hard to fathom nowadays, absolutely. But, you know, and, you know, just kind of, because there's so few people, it wasn't really that many people that were into the underground extreme metal scene back then. It wasn't like now, so it was very different then. So you kind of kept track of everybody through regular mail, and what they call snail mail. And, you know, I'd go over to the UK on my summer vacations and hang out there and sort of travel with Napalm Death in their van and to gigs and stuff like that. And, you know, I was just a fan of that scene that was emerging in the UK then in the 80s, in the late 80s, which was kind of like grind, death, I don't know what you call it, but it was like Napalm Death, Bolt Thrower, Carcass, Unseen Terror, a bunch of bands, stuff like that. Quite extreme stuff, you know. It was very exciting at the time.
And
so I was a fan of that. I was a fan of that, and that's how I got to know. I kind of infiltrated the UK scene.
Right, cool. But back in Sweden, you really helped, in a lot of people's eyes, launch the whole Swedish death metal scene that evolved, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s back there with Carnage, of course, one of the first Swedish death metal albums to ever be released, Dark Recollections. Do you have fond memories of that?
Well, I mean, those are just baby steps, you know. It's like, I don't really... Like, there was a book that was released about Swedish death metal recently.
Right, yep.
And I think I was interviewed for one of the editions. I don't think I got around to doing the original one, but I think there was a U.S. edition or something that came out, and I think I'm included in that one.
You definitely are. I read the book, yep.
Okay, cool. But, you know, it's just like, I don't really think too much about those days. I noticed when I read the book, the original one, it seemed like a lot of people were kind of hung up on the past, and I'm not really like that as a person. So I'm always a little bit like, I'm not ashamed of my past. I think Carnage was a cool band. Carcass is a cool, really cool thing that I'm proud of. I'm proud of that I was a part of that. But I don't like think about it a lot, and I don't think. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Right. No, I hear what you're saying, definitely.
It's not like the main thing that's happened in my whole life. I've just kind of considered, I've been going through so many different, I keep progressing. I'd like to think that I keep progressing anyway, And it's not really something that I'm not hung up on the past or anything like that. But it's cool, you know? And it's cool for the fans that are into that era of metal, that they that style of metal, too, that, you know. Yeah, when people come up to me with a Carnage LP or something, get me to sign it, you know, of course, that's awesome. Yeah.
Right. Cool. Now, I wanted to mention your signature foot pedal that you have. It's the GIM, right?
G1M.
G1M. Okay, G1M. I'm sorry. So the G1M, is that something that you run through an amp or you use more directly like going into your board or something?
You can do both. You can do both. It's very, it's sort of, they were doing Zoom. They've been giving me like some free gadgets here and there over the last few years. And they gave me something that was called G1. And it was like their standard edition, like a little, you know, like the pods that Line 6 used to do. And
right,
stuff.
Right.
And I just brought it on the road and I started, you know, I was just using it for practicing, you know, with my headphones, really. And then also put them through a little practice amp and stuff like that. And so I was using that for about a year, you know, just for warming up and stuff, really. Not for getting any sounds in the studio or anything, really. It's a really cheap unit. It's only like $50-$60, I believe.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it's like really low priced. And then they asked me if I could do this signature edition, you know, with 40 of my own, you know, signature sounds. I don't know anybody's got 40 signature sounds, but
yeah, right.
I had a stab at that, and I came up with like 10 really solid metal sounds, and then also a bunch of crazy sounds, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was fun, and we put that out, and it's been very successful. I think it's been the most successful one they've had. They've done one with George Lynch and some other people, John Five and people like this. But this one, obviously, it appeals to the extreme metal. Like I did, like a Carnage sound, like a Swedish death metal sound.
Right.
Okay, there I go. There I'm back in my past again. But anyway, I did that, and I did like a Carcass-inspired sound, like a Hard Work type sound. I did a bunch of Arch Enemy type sounds and beyond, you know.
Cool. I can't believe it's only, you know, $60. That's great.
Yeah, I know. It's like retails for like $59 or something like that.
Wow.
Something, so. Yeah, and it comes with like a poster and a sticker and a pick and, you know, that. No talent, though. You got to get your own talent.
Right, right.
Very. No skills in the box. But, you know, I think it sounds really good for what it is, you know. And
cool.
I think it's the first pedal that's sort of their multi-effect sort of practice tool that's geared towards extreme metal. Because usually it's kind of like shred type stuff, right? Or
right.
Oh, it's just a different, you know, more traditional hard rock, like Icons from the 70s, 80s, more normally, I guess. And I'm a 90s death metal icon.
All right. Very cool. Well, we got to check that out. And before I let you go, I just wanted to get your take on it was a guitar player who toured with you when you were on Ozfest, and I think he actually played on one song on Doomsday Machine. Gus G has been in the news a lot lately, replacing Zach in Ozzy's band. And I was wondering, did Ozzy first discover Gus when he was out in the road on Ozfest with you guys?
I have no idea how that all went down. I mean, I've talked to Gus. I've congratulated him on his awesome opportunity and everything. And we stay in touch. You know, we still remain good friends. He came in and he did us a big, you know, solid favor, you know, by coming in and helping us out. My brother Chris quit the band
right.
before Ozfest 2005, and Gus came in and learned, you know, 10 songs really quick and did the whole thing, did that whole tour. That was 2 months in the US that we spent together. So yeah, we got a great friendship still. I mean, that was the Ozfest, right? So I don't know, maybe they heard about him there, but you know, he's been making some waves with his own band and stuff for the last
right.
couple of years. So I don't know. He's a great player and a good guy. So And then very handsome. He's very handsome as well.
Yeah, I'm sure that helps.
Being Greek.
Right. And then Frederick came in after Gus, right? Before your brother came back, right?
Is that sorry?
Yeah. Frederick came in after Gus.
Yeah, Frederick. Yeah, Frederick. Yeah, and Frederick was in when we were talking to. He was in a band called Talisman, who was like a melodic.
Yeah, right.
Like an AOR type band, almost. And
I think that was Jeff Scott Soto was in that band.
That's right. Yeah. So he made like 7 or 8 records with that band, and you know he was looking to play something heavier, and I found him, you know, through the internet or something, and that was great. I mean, he was in with us for like 18 months or something.
So right.
That was a bit more longer, and I learned a lot of playing with both him and Frederick, Gus and Frederick. You know, they're both really great guitar players, and me and my brother have been playing together for so long that we can't really impress each other at all, you know.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, it was fun. It's actually, I picked up a lot from both those guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, Frederick was nice. We had him on the show, maybe about a year ago when he was in town with Opeth, actually.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining us on Talking Metal. We're now going to get into a song called Pilgrim. It is off The Root of All Evil by Arch Enemy, which will be in stores September 28th, 2009. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Have a great one.
Okay, cheers.
Bye.
Bye.